Y'all, Mike Malloy here on the Malloy Show. How you doing? It is Friday. Aren't we happy? Well, I damn sure am. This has just been a weird week, I guess, because of this ridiculous bronchitis-y thing, which appears to be gone now. But like so many of these colds, you defeat the bacterius or virium or whatever the hell it is, and then you're stuck with the cough for the next 3 or 4 months, right? Anyway, hi. Welcome to Friday night. I was watching Hardball tonight. Watched Chris Matthews' report on a survey taken by Daily Kos. And it's about where these birther freaks come from. And it's a breakdown where they come from in terms of their political affiliation. But the part that was really scary to me was where they come from in terms of the country, the regional locations of these birthers. Now, the birthers, of course, are the ones who insist that Barack Obama is not an American. It's a real shocker. First of all, the overarching statistic that I found almost unbelievable, 58% of Republicans either think Barack Obama wasn't born in the U.S. or aren't sure. 58%. Now, the way that breaks down, 28% do not believe he was born here. It's almost one out of three Republicans. Get that. And another 30% aren't sure. You know, that works out to 58%. 42% think he was. But when you have two-thirds of a political party able to tell you that they do not believe the President of the United States, who has gone to university, who has served in Congress, who served in state legislatures, who has been investigated more than any other person in the history of the earth, except possibly Bill Clinton. When you have a political party who can then say he's not, the majority say either he's not a citizen or I'm not sure, then you have a political party that is comprised of the dumbest of dumbasses. It's astonishing. But these are the people who listen to right-wing talk. These are the people who listen to Limbaugh and Beck and Hannity and the rest of these thugs. And this is the end result. I couldn't believe this. In other words, the majority of Republicans polled either don't know about or don't believe the incontrovertible evidence that has been presented over and over and over and over again that Obama was born in Hawaii in 1961. It's astonishing. Now, it also explains why the Republicans are being cute with the whole birther movement. You know, when the Republicans are forced to vote in the House, they vote, oh, yeah, he's an American citizen. Yeah, okay. But when they go back home and talk to their crackerhead idiot constituents, you know, they will tend to leave it open. Well, you know, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe. What do you think? I don't know, man. It's bizarre. Now, here's the part that I found to be absolutely, on the one hand, expected. On the other hand, kind of astonishing. The sentiment regarding doubt about Barack Obama's birth validity is the strongest here in the South. Why, of course. Here in the South. Yes, indeed. You know, if it weren't for the lovely winters here in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains and the fact that if we want to drive, we're only a few hours from both the Gulf, the Atlantic, the mountains. You know, I would be so out of here. But here in the South, this is where this birther sentiment is the strongest. Now, here's how the numbers break down. When asked the question, you believe that Barack Obama was born in the United States or not. In the Northeast, 93% of the people said yes. In the Midwest, 90% said yes. In the West, 87% said yes, because out west, you also get into some crazies out there in the southwestern United States. But here in the South, only 47% said yes. Jesus God. Now, as far as political parties, 96% of Democrats either said yes or, well, no, 93% said yes. Independents, 83% said yes. Republicans, 70% said either, I'm sorry, hold on. 58%, I just told you that, said either no or not sure. 58% of Republicans said either no or were not sure. I mean, what does that tell you about the excellent job that the right-wing nutcases on radio and television have done, and garbage dumps like WorldNet Daily and Free Republic and some of these other crap holes where I don't know who goes there to get information. Well, obviously it's right-wingers and Republicans. But this is the kind of a job that they have done. How can there be citizens of this country, though, who are this stupid? This is a part that amazes me. And again, when you have a political party where almost two-thirds think that the President of the United States either wasn't born in the U.S. or they're not sure, then you have a political party that you can get to do anything. You can get them to vote for anybody. All you have to use is fear and terror. This political party now, and it's centered here in the South, is comprised for the most part of white people. Without a doubt, cowards. Without a doubt, dumbasses. Without a doubt, functionally illiterate individuals. Without a doubt, people who are of low education. People who have absolutely nothing going on in their lives to speak of that's worth a damn. So they spend their time listening to this right-wing garbage that pours over their radio stations, whether it is Neil Bortz, and he blankets the South, or Limbaugh, who does the same, or Hannity, or Beck, all of these people, these right-wingers on media, and the people that live in the crap holes of online, of WorldNet Daily and Free Republic and places like that. The listeners, the readers sit down here, Just saturated in their ignorance, and absorb this stuff through their skin. I mean, it's like osmosis. It just slurps into their bodies, this incredible stupidity. And this also, of course, is the part of the country where you find the vast majority of people believing that the world was created 6,000 years ago and was done, finished, in 6 days, so that on the seventh, the cloud spook could take a break. How can we have gotten this far in the evolution of human beings and still have that in this country? Now, I realize there are other countries where superstition, witchcraft, and heebie-jeebies and crazy belief systems still exist. But here? Well, any group of people that includes a vast majority that either does not believe or is not sure where the President of the United States was born is a group of people that you can convince to vote against their own best interests, whether it's economic interests, healthcare interests, employment interests, education interests, interest in justice under the law. You can get these people to do anything if you are enough of a demagogue. And God knows the right-wing Republicans have demagogues coming out their butts. You can get them to do anything you want them to do. And of course, that's what's going on. Get out, woman, and look inside, come on. celebrate the next 100 years of engineering excellence at the GMC Super Event. Check out the legendary 09 Sierra 1500 or the 8-passenger Acadia. Visit GMCDealer.com. Take delivery by July 31st. That's today. See dealer for details. Past the hour. Coming up after the next break, we're going to do podcast trivia all night. We'll do it at the bottom of each hour, and the first round will be after the next break, during which we will open the lines, and you can jump in here and take a shot. Also, we're just actually a week and a day. It's a Saturday, next Saturday night, not tomorrow, but next Saturday night, this huge event put together by AM 1090 in Seattle, the Town Hall Forum. This is the fourth annual Town Hall Forum. And I want to invite you to get tickets and come by. Stephanie Miller will be there. I will be there. Tom Hartman, Bill Press, Ron Reagan, and the whole thing will be hosted by David Postman, the former chief political reporter for the Seattle Times. Tickets are still available. I don't know how many of them are great tickets, but I know that there are tickets still available. Just go to AM1090Seattle.com, AM1090Seattle.com. And I'm really looking forward to the people who so graciously support this program in the Seattle area. Looking forward to meeting as many folks as I can. So, and I'm sure Stephanie and Press and the rest of Hartman feel the same way. So, come on by. Go by the website, AM1090. AM1090Seattle.com. Hello! AM1090Seattle.com. And get a ticket. It's a week from tomorrow night, okay? And really look forward to seeing everybody there. Be a lot of fun. These events that AM 1090 puts on, they are always a hoot. We have a good time. I've been listening a lot this week, as you know, doing a lot of television since I have been more or less immobilized. I hate this. I hate not being able to swim my mile every day and do whatever exercises I do. I just hate it. But nothing has happened this week, so watching a lot of the boob tube. Jesus God, it's a boob tube. If you stick with the cable channels, the news cable channels, long enough, your brain starts to dribble out your ears. It's horrifying. It's just horrifying. And I'm referring to CNN and MSNBC, and then of course ABC, CBS, and NBC, and even some of the business channels. When you listen to this garbage that's put out there, I don't know how people do it all day long. Anyone who listens to television or watches television all day long has got to be totally, mad. At some point, your brain has to snap. It's awful. But in doing that, which probably is what happened to me this week, but in doing this, what I have learned at these, is that these right-wing Republican conservative, that's all one word, jerkwads have nothing. They're offering nothing, to help solve this health insurance crisis that we're dealing with in this country. It is a crisis. It's a health insurance problem. It's not a health care problem. It's a health insurance problem. With 50 million people uninsured, which is one out of six, and at any given time, people trying to maintain their health insurance with enormous copays, enormous deductibles, enormous premiums. So I watched the absolutely focused and concentrated effort that's being made to demolish whatever attempt Obama and the Democrats are trying to get through Congress. It's astonishing to watch. There was a an instruction sheet, a pamphlet, a newsletter, whatever, put out by an organization that is funded by the healthcare industry, the pharmaceutical insurance industry, that instructs people how to disrupt these town hall meetings where the local members of Congress trying to get some information what people want, whether it's senators or House members, Republican or Democrat, it doesn't make any difference. And this pamphlet instructs the crazy people, the ones who don't believe that Obama is an American, instructs them on how to go to these meetings. It's written in very short sentences, monosyllabic words, so as not to confuse these dumb bastards. But it tells them how to go to these meetings and disrupt the meeting. Not to get information, not to offer suggestions, not to make a counter proposal, not to figure out a way how to solve the health insurance crisis, but how to disrupt the meeting. I'm just blown away. Every time I think that we have scraped the bottle, the bottom of the barrel where it concerns the absolute moronic impulses of such a huge number of Americans, and then something like this comes up again, you know, every day. It never stops. But it's astonishing to me. So when I ask that rhetorical question, how do these people, you know, what are these people thinking about? Well, not thinking about anything. Evangelicals, Republicans, conservatives, they're used to being told exactly what to do, and that if they don't do it, they'll be in deep trouble. If you're an evangelical and you don't do what you're told to do, you're going to burn in hell forever. So are your babies, so are your mama, so are all your cousins, so are your dog. Everybody will burn in a lake of fire for all eternity, and that's longer than, you know, 10 years. So it's not surprising to me to understand that these people are partially insane. What is surprising to me is that somehow they continue to function. I'm shocked. Shocked, I tell you. All right, one open line if you want to jump in here to do trivia. The number is, what's the number, Kathy? 877-99-MALLOY. Do join us.
Have you seen the bigger piggies in the starched white shed? You will find the bigger piggies stirring up the dead. Always have clean sheds to play around with.
It is time once again for podcast trivia on the Malloy program. Yes, indeed, ladies and gentlemen, we have one of three prizes for everybody tonight. A new SUV Hummer. Hey! Or a $50,000, what do you call those? IRAs. No? Okay. Well, the third one then is a one-year gift subscription to the Malloy program's commercial-free podcast downloads. I think we'll go with that one. What do you think, Johnny?
Yes, I agree.
Oh, man. I'm too exhausted to say that kind of nonsense. Mercedes is in Mesa, Arizona, and has decided to take a shot at this, right, Mercedes?
Yes.
Okay. Are you a regular listener, or are you just trying to sneak in here?
No, I'm a regular listener.
All right.
When I can get to my computer.
I hear you. All right. Well, if you win, then you won't have to be wired to your computer. You'll be able to hear it any place you want to. All right, you ready to play?
Sure.
Okay. This is multiple choice. I will ask a question and give you four possible answers, and you pick one. Here's your question. How many times has the Dark Lord Dick Cheney's heart tried to end its miserable existence? In other words, how many heart attacks has Dick Cheney had? A, 2, B, 4, C, 6, or D, 534? How many heart attacks has Dick Cheney had? 2, 4, or 6?
6.
6? Oh, I'm sorry. No, Mercedes, the answer is 4. There may be a little wishful thinking in saying 6, but, anyway, nice try. I appreciate the fact you tried. And, if you get in, next hour or the following hour, you can try again. Thanks, Mercedes. All right. Moving right along. Who's next? Bobby is in Decatur, Alabama. Bobby, welcome to the program.
Hello, Mike.
how are you this evening?
Oh, just, super that I got in.
Okay. Well, you're here. Now, let's see if you can get out with the prize, all right?
Do my best.
All right, here we go. Here's your question, and then you'll have four possible answers. President Bush made three of the following statements. Which one of the following statements was made by Dan Quayle? You remember Dan Quayle, right?
Yes, sir.
Bush one, Bush Quayle. All right. Which one of the following statements was made by Dan Quayle? Although three of them were made by George W. Bush. Which one was made by Quayle? Here we go. A. Rarely is the question asked, is our children learning? B. If we don't succeed, we run the risk of failure. C. More and more of our imports come from overseas. D. I know how hard it is to put food on your family. Now, which one of those statements was made by Dan Quayle?
Could I hear the first one again?
Here's A. Rarely is the question asked, is our children learning? The second one, if we don't succeed, we run the risk of failure. Three, more and more of our imports come from overseas. And fourth, or D, I know how hard it is for you to put food on your family. Which one did Dan Quayle say?
I'm going to go with C.
More and more of our imports come from overseas. I'm sorry, Bobby, that was Dan Quayle, but that's all right. That's all right. That was Bush, I mean. Dan Quayle said, if we don't succeed, we run the risk of failure. So it was number B, or letter B. Bobby, thanks for trying, man. If you can get back in bottom of the next hour or the third hour tonight, you can try again. Oh, my. We're just not getting a quick winner here. All right, we're going to try. Who's next? James is in Dayton, Ohio. Hey, James.
Hey, how's it going?
It's moving right along. You ready to try this?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and give it a shot.
Okay, here we go. I'll ask the question. You got four possible answers.
All right.
What two federal criminal charges was Cheney's former chief of staff, Scooter Libby, convicted of? What two federal criminal charges was Scooter Libby convicted of? Was it A, bribery and espionage, B, fraud and extortion, C, perjury and obstruction of justice, or D, treason and forgery?
C.
C?
Yeah.
That would be perjury and obstruction of justice?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. You win. Way to go, James. You got it right, man. Congratulations. You get a one-year subscription to our commercial-free podcast downloads. Way to go, James. Let me put you on hold. Don't go away. I'm going to put you on hold. Kathy's going to get the information so that you can have this delivered right to your computer or your phone or your wherever you want it delivered, as a matter of fact. All right. That's it for this hour. We're going to do this again next hour and the third hour, so stick around. All right. I've got to share with you the end of the week missive from our economic affairs contributor, Prairie 2. And for those of you who listen to these and then go to his website, you know Prairie 2 is pretty unequivocal in how he feels about this stuff. You can go to his website, numeral2.com, prairie2.com. This is what he writes. Now, remember, the GDP was released today, and Prairie 2 writes, the GDP wasn't down as much as last quarter, and this week they only seized five banks so far. Happy days are here again. The U.S. gross domestic product was only down 1% the last quarter. The factories have all reopened as the massive employment programs of the WPA and the CCC put men and boys to work building infrastructure all across America. Government programs have refinanced all the mortgages at affordable rates. Wait. Wrong century. My bad. We continue to hemorrhage jobs at an alarming rate. And as the quarter ended, the extended unemployment benefits for many workers started to run out. Factories continue to be crated up and shipped to China, and exports continue to decline. Foreclosures continue unabated, expected to exceed 8 million this year. So why the improvement, or rather less decline in the GDP? Who's turning over money? Well, the biggest slice of pie in the chart of the GDP is the financial services industry. They're doing really well, aren't they? Some 4,800 Wall Street executives got bonuses in excess of $1 million each. Big banks got trillions from the Federal Reserve and are showing record profits on paper despite ongoing record losses on loans. Sales of foreclosed homes have also added to business activity, and selling factories and our natural resources to China helps also. Will the next quarter look as rosy? Will cash for clunkers rebuild the economy? Earlier today, the FDIC seized four small banks at an estimated cost of $200 million to taxpayers. A few minutes ago, they seized a larger bank in Illinois at an estimated cost of $700 million. This number of banks is less than the six taken over last Friday, but the day isn't over yet. The FDIC has leaked the information that they have a list of 300 banks they're watching. Banking pundits are putting the number of closings this year at around 1,000. The expanded FDIC consumer bank account insurance expires at the end of the year. Congress will probably extend it if anybody is still taking U.S. dollars. Prairie2.com. Well, that's uplifting. Oh, my God. You know, that's always the attitude. You know, kill the messenger. In light of all that, you know, I still maintain that Malloy's approach to democratic socialism would save the entire nation. And remember what my brand of democratic socialism is. It means to nationalize five key industries. Banking, for the obvious reasons. Energy, for the obvious reasons. Healthcare, of course. Transportation. And weapons production. Now, weapons production should be nationalized with the goal of eliminating weapons production altogether. We don't need it. We just don't need it. Now, small businesses, family-owned farms, high-tech firms, all sorts of startup businesses would be left alone to practice their entrepreneurship as long as labor and environmental laws are followed. Right? But banking, energy, healthcare, transportation, and weapons production, all to be nationalized. And that last one, again, with the goal of eliminating weapons production. Why do we build weapon systems? Anybody have any ideas? We have nukes. That's all we need. We don't need fighters and bombers and tanks and flamethrowers and things that explode and shred flesh. We really don't. We don't need to have 1.5 million men and women in uniform. We don't really need it, right? So why are we still doing it? Well, we're doing it for the very reason that Eisenhower warned us about. And you notice we never make war on countries that have nuclear weapons. Ever.
Another cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. I got a reminder from one of our listeners, something that was posted at alternet.org about a year and a half ago, since we're talking about health insurance and medicine and surgeries and doctor visits, so on and so forth. This hideous cooperation between Big Pharma and the U.S. military, the Pentagon. This is something that's not talked about a lot. I think occasionally you may see it in the mainstream media, But the fact that the Department of Defense, when this was first posted over a year ago, was considering the idea of medicating soldiers to desensitize them to combat trauma. Now, we know that they're given uppers and downers, uppers in the morning, downers at night. This is nothing new. This goes back to, I don't know, how long we've had methamphetamines, which goes back decades. It was invented, I believe, by the Japanese military, so their soldiers could endlessly fight. But this is different. What the pharmaceutical industry came up with for the military was something called the morning after pill, only it's spelled M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G, morning, the morning after pill. It is propanolol. Is that how you pronounce it, Kat? Propanolol, P-R-O-P-R-A-N-A-L-O-L. And if it's taken immediately following a traumatic event, any traumatic event, it subdues a victim's stress response and therefore softens that person's perception of the memory. It's kind of like, I guess, like Versed, which I've taken before, which to me is just a delightful drug. I've taken it when I've had oral surgery, and you don't remember a thing. Only it's such a nice vacuum it leaves in your brain. It's a good thing Versed is not available on open market. I would become like Limbaugh and OxyContin, probably. No, not really. But this stuff is designed, propanolol, to be taken immediately following a traumatic event like a firefight or a mistaken bombing of a wedding or the mistaken identity of people trying to go home who are blown to pieces by U.S. troops. And it softens the perception of that event. It doesn't mean that the memory has been erased, but the drug can render it emotionally toothless. Now, that's scary. Versed just erases stuff. I think marijuana, one of the characteristics of marijuana is short-term memory loss. But this stuff doesn't erase the memory. It just renders it kind of meaningless. Oh, yeah, I remember blowing those people up. Yeah. So, I've not heard anything about this for the past year and a half. But if these soldiers are given propranolol, they most certainly come home with a diminished range of feelings and memory. And they will come home lobotomized, chemically lobotomized. What does that mean where it concerns their family, their friends? The civic organizations they might belong to, the VA, the churches, what does all that mean? The fact that the pharmaceutical industry is working to, and thanks to Bob who sent this in, is working like this with the Department of Defense. Now, I realize it's nothing new. I don't mean to go, oh, look. Let's not forget what the pharmaceutical industry suggested and experimented on our troops with back during Vietnam. Hallucinogenic drugs that would render a soldier so violent and so confused that anything that came within the scope of his weapon would be cut to pieces. It's just shocking, isn't it? See, this is why I would, in Malloy's little world of democratic socialism, the weapons industry, and that would include this, would become the sole ownership would be the U.S. government, us, in other words, and the goal then would be to eliminate it altogether. Of course, the only problem with socializing everything is that you got to be careful who you put in power then. But I think we could do that. We could have standing committees of citizens who, learned citizens who kept a close eye on everything, right? Huh? Wouldn't that work? Wouldn't that be wonderful? No? You don't think so? I think it would be great. And the last thing for this hour, big article at consortiumnews.com written by Ray McGovern about how Christians are pretty much silent where it concerns torture. He says the Christian churches and the members of the Christian churches believe torture of suspected terrorists is justified. Now, the polls were conducted with white, non-Hispanic Catholics, white evangelicals, and white mainline Protestants. A majority, 54% of those who attend church regularly, said torture is justified, while a majority of those not attending church regularly said that torture was rarely or never justified. The majority of people who go to church say that torture is justified. The majority of people who do not say that torture is not justified. What does that say to you? That speaks volumes to me, but what does that say to you? We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour on the Malloy program, and where you are, too. Email here from Benedict. Mike, guess who else used pamphlets advising how to disrupt meetings held by political opponents? I'm not even going to try to pronounce the German, but the SA, a particularly delightful subset of Hitler's Nazi conspirators. Yeah, that was back in the 20s and in early 30s, I believe, right? Before the SS was put together and the dumbasses were purged. The SA were the street thugs, kind of like the people you meet, here at Palin rallies or Glenn Beck rallies or Sean Hannity rallies. The real brain dead knuckle draggers, the ones who will do whatever they're told until they're finally eliminated. Once again, the Nazi model is, and of course we shouldn't be surprised that the Nazi model is the one that Republicans use, the conservatives use, the National Socialist model, which is, and that's right. They're also trying to tell people now that single payer health care, which is off the table, folks. Don't worry about it. Single payer health care is part of National Socialism. Further proof, of course, that not only do the people who listen to this garbage not understand the term National Socialism, but the people who talk about it and fill their head with this stuff, the usual group of right wingers on the air. Either they know and deliberately lie, which would certainly be no surprise. They lie about everything, or they don't know themselves. But it's astonishing stuff. By the way, the phones are open if you want to jump in here and comment. 877-996-2556. 877-996-2556. Anyway, back to this Ray McGovern wrote about at consortiumnews.com. Christians largely mum on torture. Again, going back to Hitler, one of the first things Hitler did on assuming power, according to Ray McGovern, was to ensure that there was a pastor or a priest in every Lutheran and Catholic parish in Germany. Why? Because Hitler calculated correctly that here would be a force for stability for his regime. And people still debate whether or not the Catholic Church in Germany and in Rome was in total support of what Hitler was doing, please. Anyway, that began another horrid chapter in the history of those professing to be followers of Jesus of Nazareth. But McGovern goes on, what kind of folks comprise the 54% of Catholics, white evangelicals, and white mainline Protestants, the 54% who attend church regularly and say torture would be justified? What kind of people are those? McGovern says, an informal survey of my friends suggests these are the my country first people. Like the fellow, McGovern writes, who recently gave me the finger when he saw my bumper sticker, which simply says, God bless the rest of the world, too. We'll have none of that, will we? McGovern writes, these are people accustomed to hierarchy, and they're comfortable being told what they should think and what they should do. They place a premium on nationalism, which they call patriotism, and on what the Germans called Ordnung, O-R-D-N-U-N-G, Ordnung. And McGovern points out it's a problem that has existed for almost 1,700 years, ever since the 4th century Christians got rid of the idea, their heritage, as a matter of fact, of nonviolent resistance to war. That's what Christians were about, nonviolent resistance to war, and threw in their lot with Constantine, the Roman emperor who convinced everybody, no, war is good. War is good. War is a good thing. Kill, kill, murder, murder. Onward Christian soldiers, not onward Christian peacemakers. God forbid that there should be a Christian who believed in peace. Now, I'm not to say that there isn't a lot of them. Of course, there are a lot of Christians who, other than the fact that they have kind of a weird belief system, are really decent people. We all know that. Come on. That's obvious. Hell, I've got people like that in my family. I've had them for years. They're good people. They just happen to believe a superstitious mythology that I call it a superstitious mythology. They call it a faith. They call it a religion, what have you. But they're decent people. They would no more think of using the Bible as a missile, or a hand grenade, or a weapon, then they would think of blaspheming the cross. They just don't think that way. Whereas the majority of mainline Protestants, Catholics, and evangelicals do see their form of worship as being willing to promote torture. And when I brought this up, this is not new. I don't know why McGovern's just writing about it now. He just wrote about it today, or is posted today. This is a study that came out several months ago, and I remember talking about it on the air because at first I was kind of shocked. See, I still believe that there are Christians out there who believe in the peaceful Jesus, the Jesus of love, the Jesus of turn the other cheek, the Jesus of do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And I know those kinds of Christians and believers of other faiths still exist. But the ones that dominate the discussion are these murderous Christians, the ones that have no problem, like Ann Coulter, no problem murdering people who don't have a religious belief like theirs. And that's scary, scary stuff. And I'm not using the word scary in a flip manner. It's horrifying stuff. It's terrifying stuff. This is what the Inquisition is all about. You know, if you don't believe the way I do, I will torture you. I will torture you until you either confess and accept my belief or you die, whichever comes first. And sometimes, even after you confess, I'm going to go ahead and kill you anyway. Wow. Sick stuff. But to see the article once again, it's at consortiumnews.com, Ray McGovern. To see it again, another clear reminder of how dangerous, how absolutely, utterly, completely dangerous religion is. And I know some people say, no, Malloy, religion in the wrong hands. Well, okay. That's a false argument. Religion itself is dangerous. Guns are dangerous. That's the fallacy in the argument. Guns don't kill people. People kill people. Hogsnot. Guns kill people. That doesn't mean that every gun is going to kill someone. You can buy a gun, lock it up, and forget about it, and it will do nothing. But religious belief leads to slavery. It leads to chaos, murder, mayhem, war, distrust, fear, disloyalty, injustice, all of it. Which is not to say that every believer practices that. I'm saying that religion leads to that, and the path is very short and very slippery, and it's all downhill. That's all. That's all. We touched on this last night. I want to get into it in a second, about this memo. Senior military advisor, American military advisor in Baghdad, has concluded in an unusually blunt memo. It was in the Times. Now, today we mentioned last night that it's time for the United States to declare victory and go home out of Iraq. Just leave. Colonel Timothy Reese, advisor to the Iraqi military's Baghdad command, asserts that the Iraqi forces have an array of problems, including corruption, poor management, and the inability to resist political pressure from Shiite political parties. But, hey, listen, can't win it all. In spite of all that, Colonel Reese argues that Iraqi forces are competent enough to hold off Sunni insurgents. Now, you notice nobody here is talking about hold off Al-Qaeda or hold off Taliban or hold off what? Hold off other Iraqis who may have a disagreement with the Shia as to who's going to rule the country. How many people have said that it's a civil war, a religious war, something that we caused by overthrowing the government, totally destabilizing the country, to the extent that thousands of our soldiers have been made dead and tens of thousands have had their brains scrambled? For what? For what? God, don't get me started on this. I just go crazy. Your phone calls when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy.
You'll see him in your head on the TV screen. Hey, buddy, I'm warning you to turn it off. Oh, he's a ghost, he's a god, he's a man, he's a guru. You're one microscopic cog in his catastrophic plan.
Truth seekers, here's the truth speaker, Mike Malloy.
Here comes the hell. 21 past the hour. Your phone calls. Rob is calling from Orlean, Virginia. Is that right, Rob?
Orlean,
Virginia. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I enjoy your program, and I really admire your stridency. you call a spade. There's not enough of that. I was watching Dylan Radigan, new show on MSNBC.
Yeah.
Not a bad show. The guy has a pretty strong populist streak, it would seem.
Mm-hmm.
One point he was chatting with, interviewing Orrin Hatch, who I believe is the senator from United Healthcare.
Yes, he is.
And Mr. Hatch was using as an example Medicare as to how the government is incapable of running anything. Look, Medicare is going broke, he said.
Oh, my.
What struck me as so ironic is Medicare is fully funded. It is projected to start needing more money, no doubt about that. But I tell you what's really broke is the federal government. The federal government and the country is probably basically bankrupt now.
Mm-hmm.
And here Mr. Hatch is making, what, $160K a year, and yet he is getting exquisite health care as a federal government employee, mm-hmm. 28 cents on the dollar.
Yeah.
Maybe part of the solution might be for people like Mr. Hatch to pick up a whole hell of a lot more of their own cost.
That's an interesting idea.
What I find disturbing is, from the progressive side, and I'm not talking about Radigan, I don't think he's a progressive,
mm-hmm.
I have not yet heard anybody suggest from the progressive side maybe people in the situation of Mr. Hatch ought to start paying a good little bit more for their own health care.
Why do you think that that's, I agree with you, why do you think that that's been the case? I'm sorry.
I think the Democrats, and particularly the progressive caucus,
mm-hmm.
don't know how to wage a fight.
Or are afraid to.
I don't know. I think that what I remember so vividly is the 2000 election, when it became known late in the cycle that, in fact, George W. Bush was convicted drunk driver at the age
right.
of 35.
Right.
And I think to myself, now what would Karl Rove have done if he had gotten that information about Al Gore?
Oh, my God.
And what did Al Gore do when he got that information?
Well, yeah.
If this is how you enter an arena, a fight, you ain't going to win.
That's true. And that's why I kind of chalk it up to cowardice, Rob. I can't help myself. Hey, thanks, man. I appreciate you checking in. You know, I don't know why Obama or the Democratic Party leadership is listening to Republicans at all. They are immaterial in every argument. Can you imagine if the Republicans had a 60-member majority in the Senate and as big a majority in the House as the Democrats have? Can you imagine? There would be, when they had one- or two-seat majority, the Democrats were cut completely out of all decision-making, all legislation, everything. They were ignored. When Roosevelt pulled the country back from a second revolution in the 30s, he completely ignored the Republicans. Roosevelt wasn't out to build coalitions. What is this coalition building crap? You see, that's Barack Obama's mindset, and I can certainly understand it. But with Republicans, it is an absolute miserable waste of time. They're not interested in cooperation or coalitions or reaching across the aisle. The only time they reach across the aisle is to rip your goddamn throat out. That's the part I don't get. Why is any Democrat in any position of power anywhere in the country, especially in Washington, interested the least in what Republicans think, what they want, what they feel? Every single bit of progress this country has ever made, every bit of progress, the Democrats or the liberals have done it, and they've dragged these filthy Republicans behind them, kicking and screaming, with one thumb in their mouth and one up their butt like a 2-year-old, an undisciplined 2-year-old. And the result of which is that Republicans and their miserable families all get to enjoy the benefits that Democrats and liberals and progressives fought tooth and nail to bring to this country. So to me, to hell with the Republicans. To hell with them. Why is anybody, why even, they don't exist. It's become a regional party of white southern males anyway. So who cares? This is the part that has me flummoxed. Were I the president for a day, or 4 years, I would work absolutely with no interest in getting any kind of input or cooperation or anything from Republicans. If some of them finally woke up that they were going to be completely ignored for 4 years and possibly eight and wanted to get the crap out of their ears and turn off right-wing media and come sit down and say, okay, let's see how we can work this out, then I might be interested. But why is anyone in the Democratic Party leadership, Obama, Reid, or Pelosi, listening to a Republican about anything? About any damn thing at all? It's a mystery, isn't it? We're going to play podcast trivia when we come back. Don't go away. I'm Mike Malloy. celebrate the next 100 years of engineering excellence at the GMC Summer Event. Check out the legendary 09 Sierra 1500 or the 8-passenger Acadia. Visit gmcdealer.com. Take delivery by today. See a dealer for details. It's time once again for podcast trivia here on the Malloy Program. Our winner will receive a one-year free subscription to MalloyCast Downloads, all commercial free. And we are still working on the generosity of a couple of anonymous donors who provided us with these free podcast subscriptions. So how about that? All right, are we ready? I think we are. We're going to start with Celeste this time. All right, Celeste, are you going to play?
Yes, Mike.
Excuse me, and you also want to make a birth or comment. So once we do the trivia thing, I'm going to put you on hold, whether you win or lose, and then we'll come back to you, okay?
Okay, that sounds wonderful. Happy Friday to you, by the way.
Say again?
Happy Friday.
Oh, thank you. Oh, my God, I'm so glad to see Friday here. I could just scream. All right, I'll ask you a question. You'll have a choice of four answers. So let's see if you can do it, okay?
All right.
During a news conference with British Prime Minister Tony Blair, how did President Bush respond when he was asked if the two leaders shared anything in common? How did Bush respond when he was asked, do you share anything in common with British Prime Minister Tony Blair? Did he say, A, we both use Colgate toothpaste? B, we both like freedom fries? C, we both like plotting world domination? Or D, we both take Cialis?
This is a true...
Yes. Yeah. Bush said, let me go through it again. Bush said, after first meeting British Prime Minister Tony Blair, he was asked if the two leaders shared anything in common. Did Bush say, yes, we both use Colgate toothpaste. Yes, we both like freedom fries. Yes, we both like plotting world domination. Or yes, we both take Cialis.
I guess I would say freedom fries.
Oh, I'm sorry. That wasn't the right answer, Celeste. Remember, they were staying at Camp David, and the next morning when they came out for a morning press conference, he was asked that question, and Bush, being the goof that he is, said, we both use Colgate toothpaste. Hey. All right, stay there, Celeste. We'll come back and talk about your birther's comment. All right, Kevin is in Brooklyn. Kevin, you ready to play?
Sure.
Okay. First of all, let me give you the question. You'll have four possible answers. Here's your question. What did former First Lady Laura Bush have in common with actor Matthew Broderick? Was it A, they both use Colgate toothpaste? B, they both attended the Walden School in New York? C, they both killed someone in a car crash? D, they're both former librarians?
They both killed someone in their car crash.
You're absolutely right. All right. Kevin wins a free one-year podcast subscription, commercial free, to the Malloy Program. Way to go, Kevin. I'm going to put you on hold, and Kathy will take the pertinent information, and congratulations. I love when people win. Now, back to Celeste. All right, Celeste, you wanted to comment on the birthers stuff, right?
Hey, Mike. Well, hey. First of all, I knew the answer to that question. That's the one you gave me.
I know. I wish I'm sorry.
Laura Bush.
I should have given it to you.
Yes, if her name was Letitia, she'd be in jail.
There you go.
Anyway, one of the things, and I must admit I didn't listen to the show the entire night tonight. I got in... a little bit ago. But anyway, during the debate with respect to the birthers, one of the things that I've never heard raised, so I'll go ahead and raise it, is the notion that no one has been able, well, first of all, everyone would agree that wherever Obama's mother was at the time of his birth, where he was born, and if it was in this country, then he's a citizen.
Right.
And I haven't been able to find anyone that can substantiate that there's in the State Department database and the passport files that they show that she left the country or came back to the country at any time during the year of his birth.
Good point.
And I'm sure that you probably remember during the primary there was the breach of the passport files.
Yeah.
And Obama's files was one of them, and I'm of the mindset that his mother's was also one, although that wasn't made public.
I
think that it was, because it was done by these temporary workers, remember?
Yes.
Contract workers. So they likely were opposition researchers for somebody.
You ought to be a detective, I swear to God. No, I had not even thought of that possibility. One more way to prove, if proof is necessary, to these morons, his citizenship. That's a good point, Celeste.
Absolutely, and you know that information is absolutely there, and
right.
You know even the far right-wing folks would have to conclude that he had to be in the same country his mother was in when he was born.
Well, that might be a stretch for them too. But you know, Celeste, if you showed them that proof that there is no record in the State Department of her passport being used to exit the country and return the country, you know what they'd say? They'd say, "Well, it's all been forged. It's all been the files have all been scrubbed. That doesn't prove anything, Celeste. You can't."
That's one powerful black man, huh?
Yeah, it is, isn't it? You can't get over these people. There is no way that kind of ignorance or this kind of ignorance could be overcome. It's just impossible.
Yeah, because he would have been able to do that prior to becoming president of the United States. Because, of course, the breach took place before
right.
he was elected, before he even had the nomination. So
well, they probably would have had to have done it before he entered public school. I mean, you have to, don't you have to show documentation? I don't know if you did back in 1966 when he was 5 years old or whenever he went to start a U.S. public school, but don't you have to prove citizenship? And Kathy, do we have to prove citizenship on Molly?
I think you have to prove age, and so you would provide a birth certificate for that.
Yeah, okay. Well, then.
Or a baptismal certificate.
Yeah.
Again, you know, for all the birthers out there that are listening, just show me the proof that his mother was out of the country, because he is absolutely born in the country where his mother was physically located.
You'd think.
At the time of his birth.
You certainly would think. All right, Celeste, thank you. That's an excellent point. Man, I hadn't thought of that at all. I think Celeste ought to go to work for the, Baltimore Police Department. No, open up a private detective agency. That's right. You don't want to go to work for the police department. My goodness. Good point. Excellent point. Kevin is in Brooklyn. Hey, Kevin.
Hi, yeah. One point I want to bring up, the reason why Barack Obama is forced to be a moderate, because these people will kill him.
Well, If you take a look at Obama's history, I realize some of his rhetoric is on the progressive side, but if you take a look at his political history, he is a moderate. He is a centrist in the Democratic Party. I don't mean a centrist on the political spectrum. But a centrist in the Democratic Party. You know, we've talked about this before. A lot of folks in this country, especially a lot of white folks who hope that Barack Obama would be the great black hope, kind of drew on his empty chalkboard whatever they wanted to draw. And I've mentioned this before. What a lot of white people don't realize is that black folk, to a large degree, in social issues are conservative. They're not conservative like Orrin Hatch or Jeff Sessions, but you understand what I mean.
I'm a conservative, and I know what you're talking about.
Right.
Okay, because I'm a West Indian New Yorker.
Uh-huh.
And I've lived and traveled throughout the South and Midwest, and I felt discrimination to the point where I say too often a lot of black Americans can't wait to get their hands on the power that a lot of the whites have, and they're slowly getting up there.
Well, yeah, I think anybody who wants to get into real power in this country will eventually gravitate toward politics, whether you know, no matter what their race is or no matter what their gender is, because that's where the power is.
Yeah.
The power is other places too, in entertainment and you know, science and so on and so forth. But the visible power. At least, I think in politics. And unless you're like Karl Rove or Dick Cheney, where you remain invisible and just pull all the strings from behind the scrim. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. But like a lot of the economy, especially in cities like Atlanta, Southern City, a lot of it is networked into the black fraternal organizations and all that, and the churches, and particularly the Baptist fundamentalist ilk. It's just the same thing as the white. Counterparts, you know.
Well, yeah, but the road to power is the same for everybody. I mean, it is. It's just that some of us have had roadblocks put on those roads for centuries, and I'm not surprised. Are you? Apparently, you are, Kevin. Thank you. I'm not surprised in the least that black folk would make a move toward political power in this country. Not at all. What they do with it when they get it. That remains to be seen in some instances. It's visible now. But, you know, a lot of people in this country who, different groups ascribed to or wanted to get power, whether they're Jews, Irish, Italians, whatever, they had to wait their turn. And they didn't have to deal with the kind of barriers that blacks did. But, yeah, I'm not the least bit surprised, Kevin. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
It's Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. Back to this, I think it was in the Times today, we talked about it last night. Colonel Timothy Reese, advisor to the Iraqi military's Baghdad command and senior military advisor in that sad country, is saying it's time for us to declare victory and go home. Too bad that advice wasn't listened to in 1968, where it concerned, or 67, where it concerned Vietnam. But the colonel says, or he said in a memo that was supposed to be, I don't think it was supposed to be leaked, although you never know in these kinds of situations. But the memo said, quote, as the old saying goes, guests, like fish, begin to smell after 3 days. Since the signing of the 2009 security agreement, we are guests in Iraq. And after 6 years in Iraq, we now smell bad to the Iraqi nose, end quote. Now, since this was made public, Colonel Reese couldn't be reached for comment. But this memo had gone to the commander in Iraq, General Odierno. But copies have been circulating among active duty and retired military officers, and they were posted on at least one military-oriented website. So the memo said, in referring to the Iraq security forces, the memo said, quote, the massive partnering efforts of U.S. combat forces with the ISF, Iraq Security Force, isn't yielding benefits commensurate with the effort and is now generating its own opposition. We should declare our intentions to withdraw all U.S. military forces from Iraq by August next, 2010. This would not be a strategic paradigm shift, but an acceleration of existing U.S. plans by some 15 months. So, now remember, U.S. combat troops, at least officially, moved out of Baghdad and other Iraqi cities last month. But Reese's memo lists a number of problems that have emerged since the withdrawal. They include, he wrote in his memo, a sudden coolness to American advisors, the forcible takeover of a checkpoint in the green zone. I'm not sure what that means. Forcible takeover? What, some Iraqi security forces took over a checkpoint run by U.S. Marines? I don't think so. So I don't know what that means. But Iraqi units, Colonel added, are much less willing to conduct joint operations with Americans now or to go after targets that the United States considers high value. Well, that's not surprised. Not surprising. The Iraq Ground Forces Command, according to the colonel, has imposed what he refers to as unilateral restrictions on American military operations that according to the colonel, violate the most basic aspects of American-Iraqi agreement. So the Iraqis want us out of their country. And it's very clear that they want us out now. Also, the memo said that the Iraq legal system has demonstrated a recent willingness to release individuals originally detained by the U.S. for attacks on the U.S. Well, attacks on U.S. Military personnel. So maybe, just maybe, American troops will come out of that horrific situation, that war that was put together by true sociopaths in the Bush crime family. The objective, I think, has pretty much been accomplished, and that was to, first of all, destroy the oil-producing capacity of Iraq, render it absolutely meaningless to the Iraqi people, and then put in a puppet government to the extent that that was possible. I mean, it's not like Hamid Karzai in Afghanistan. Afghanistan is a failed state. It's a narco state. Afghanistan, as a coherent political entity, really doesn't exist. But Iraq does. So, while, what's his name? The prime minister of Iraq may be our puppet. He's not completely. Not. As a matter of fact, he's the sort of puppet who eventually, it's like one of those horror flicks, eventually pulls the strings out of the puppeteer's hands, climbs up the puppeteer's torso, and sinks his fangs into the puppeteer's neck. So, while, what's his name in Iraq, may be our boy, he's not our boy like Hamid Karzai is in Afghanistan. And the objective, like I said, has been accomplished. Put in a controllable government. Make sure the oil companies get what the oil companies wanted when the oil companies and Dick Cheney decided to invade Iraq. And that has been accomplished. In that regard, you know, the banner that hung on the aircraft carrier when Bush landed all those years ago. That's now been accomplished. That mission has been accomplished. And I just want to say to everybody who really made an effort by demonstrating before that war began, 10 million people around the planet, at least a million in this country, and to all those people that held up signs that said no blood for oil, that it was an oil war, you were right. Of course you were right. And I was right as a participant in those demonstrations. We knew. We absolutely knew. And we knew before the first American soldier or Marine had been murdered by Dick Cheney or George Bush. We knew. But it didn't matter. This government does not respond to the American people. This government responds to American corporations. It was true then. It's true now. The only question is when are the American people going to reassert control over our own government? We'll be back after the break and take some phone calls. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It is 6 and a half past the hour. This is the Molloy program. The phone number here is 877-996-2556. If you'd like to join in the discussion. Let's start with Joe this hour, who is in Newcastle, Indiana. Hey, Joe.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Good. The reason I called is I know you've talked about purchasing guns before, and I purchased guns. There's a little bitty piece of paper that, you know, you got to fill out. There's like 10 questions on there.
Mm-hmm.
That asks about felonies, domestic violence, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And I think there is a question about substance abuse on there. Am I correct on that?
It varies state to state. There's no such thing as a national gun permit. It varies state to state. And I don't think, it's been so long since I got a permit in Georgia. I don't think it ever, it did say, have you ever been arrested, for, you know, for any charge other than traffic or something like that. But, I don't think it asks about substance abuse.
Okay, I think, well, when I bought mine in Indiana, I remember there was a question, do you have a history of substance abuse?
Right, okay.
And I don't know, maybe it's different from state to state, I don't know. I thought that was the Brady Law, though,
mm-hmm.
which was a federal law.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my question was, I don't know what the law is in Glenn Beck's state, but he is a admitted alcoholic and talks about carrying guns to movie theaters. I just wondering what
it
feels about him owning a firearm.
Yeah, well, I hear that. I wonder, though, you know, usually when they talk about substance abuse, they being whatever government it is, state, county, feds, whatever, when they talk about substance abuse, they're not talking about the two substances that kill more people than all the wars put together in the history of the human race, and that would be alcohol and tobacco. What they're talking about is, you know, reefer or cocaine or heroin or, you know, something like that. So are you driving a truck?
Yes, I am, sir.
Oh, that's I just wondered. Is it raining?
No.
Oh, because I'm getting a lot of noise from your truck, which is all right. I mean, I don't care. I was just curious. Where are you ultimately headed tonight?
I'm in Myrtle Beach.
Oh, you're in South Carolina now.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. And are you heading home or?
I got two or three stops here, and then I head out.
How's business?
It's all right. And we sell the little knick-knack stuff in gas stations, so we've taken a big hit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've lost a lot of people.
Are you
trying to survive?
Are you an independent trucker? You own your own rig, or do you work for a big company, or what?
No, I work for a small incorporated company that's decent size. They got about six rigs.
Uh huh.
And then I don't know, probably 40, anywhere between 40 and 60 routes we deliver to that.
Mm-hmm.
In turn, have a little box truck and take stuff to the gas station and whatnot.
Have you been told that business is such that you might be unemployed? Has anyone said that to you?
No, but we did the route guy. We lost 70 route guys since January.
How many?
70.
70?
Yeah.
70 drivers?
Yeah, not truck drivers, but the actual route guys that we deliver to.
Oh,
70 stops pulled.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was 70 route guys unemployed.
Good Lord. Do you feel like your job is fairly secure or not?
I'd be the last to go because they need somebody delivering.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then, you know, so they can only cut so many drivers because they got to get so many places in so little of a time.
Yeah.
So we'd be the last to go. But,
well,
you know, I worried about it for a while, but my mom said, you know, at least you got a job right now, and that's all you got to think about, you know?
That's true. Well, listen, thanks for answering all the questions. I don't mean to, you know, give you a third degree, but I'm just curious how, you know, especially truckers, because I can't think of another industry that so quickly reflects a downturn in business as thanks, Joe, as the trucking industry. You know, I mean, if people are not buying, then the shelves are not emptying. If the shelves are not emptying, there's no need to resupply them. And if there's no need to resupply them, yada, yada, yada. So I'm just wonder about that sometimes. Thanks, Joe. I appreciate your your chatting with us there for a minute. Take care. Drive safely. Bruce is in California. Bruce, welcome to the program.
Yeah, good evening, Mike.
Hi.
I was calling about your comment about propanolol.
Yeah, is that how you pronounce it, propanolol?
I think I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
But anyway, it's that stuff that basically, you know, I have a vast amount of experience with this now. I want you to know that I watched an entire 15-minute segment. I'll put down 15 minutes on it.
Okay, I got you.
So I really know what I'm talking about.
Right, right.
But in that program, honestly, it seemed like a really good drug because of the fact that it takes away the PTSD before it sets in.
Mm-hmm.
And they were using it on rape victims and on people that had had other traumatic experiences long after the event, and they would take the drug and they would really talk about the experiences that they had, and they came away like, oh, weight was off their shoulders, and it wasn't creating the same baggage on them that, mm-hmm. that it was before.
Did the segment on 60 Minutes talk about whether or not, or A or B, what to do if those repressed memories did surface without propanolol to ease it? In other words, when that stuff eventually comes bubbling back up, if it does, what happens then?
Well, my understanding of it, first of all, it was not developed for this purpose. It was a drug that already existed, and it was found that it was effective at this.
Mm-hmm.
But my understanding was that they only took it a couple of times. And in the case of a combat soldier who's constantly exposed to these traumatic events,
mm-hmm.
They would basically take it after something traumatic they witnessed or experienced. And it just basically cuts down the possibility of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something you have to just keep on taking, in
right.
other words. My understanding of it, anyway.
Better living through chemistry. I just wonder, though, If it eliminates the horror of the horrible event, and if it does not, what happens when a memory of that event surfaces, you know, 5 years later?
I think it's a valid question. I can see where you're going with it, but on the other hand, you know, how do you know unless you try?
Yeah.
I mean, it certainly, I would say that if I were in a combat or my kid were in a combat situation, I would want him to take it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wouldn't want them to. I mean, I've seen the effects of PTSD too.
Right, right.
So, you know, that's pretty devastating. And if it can mitigate that in any way, I think it's worthwhile.
Sure, sure. I mean, as long as we're going to send young men and young women into combat, there should be something to alleviate that horror.
Yeah, and I mean, that's what. I mean, my father was a World War II vet, and
mm-hmm.
60 years later, he was still having nightmares.
Yeah.
You know, and it was pretty awful, you know.
Yeah, for sure. All right, well, listen, thanks, Bruce. Thanks for the information, because, you know, when I first read that, article, you know, I thought, oh, my God, here we go again. Something to render a young human being emotionless so that young human being can go fight and burn and kill and die for corporate America. If on the other hand, it's a drug that, stops the horror from ricocheting inside the head of one of these young people, then I guess it's, it has some value. I just wish there was, some way that, we as a, as a species that has evolved to this point, if we could just get past the idea of killing each other to make a point, you know what I'm saying? Whether that point is political or economic or religious, you know? But I guess that's kind of naive sophomore in high school thinking, isn't it? All right, we'll be back after the break. Do stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
is the outrage. Oh, here it is. Back to Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. Back to your calls here. We have an open line if you want to get on the program tonight, 877-996-2556. Alan is in Miami. Hey, Alan.
How are you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Oh, I'm trying to hang in there.
All right.
I didn't call up with the most pleasant of conversation tonight, but, you know.
Yeah.
Somewhat reflecting on someone else who called in earlier. Said, where's the opposition here? When you know where were the candidates in the party, the Democratic Party in this case, when George Bush, military record and his driving record and everything else was up for. But I think it harkens back to the main point that I wanted to get at is that for a long time I felt that what we really have is a civil war going on here, and we're not willing to admit it.
Mm-hmm.
One side is quite openly ready to use. We can see every day these attacks. You spoke the other night, for example, very, very eloquently about the whole race issue, which I thought was wonderful, and described what it was like, and talked about the little black book and everything else. I really wished I had taped that to take to my anthropology class to play to people so they can hear what a thinking person sounds like.
Okay.
One of the things that we discuss, of course, is that if you have sort of an anthropological point of view, a viewpoint of all humanity really coming from similar origins and just having different cultural ways of adapting to their situation, we understand that we are essentially all the same thing, and this racism is an artifice completely. And as you say, so much of the violence comes through the so-called religious manipulation of belief systems. But the point I want to get is we're not acting as though this war were going on. They are ready to. I mean, they hate us. We're ready to go out and do whatever they can to stop us. If they can stop us without a lot of violence, they'll do it. If they need the violence, they'll do it. They have their little soldiers. They have their lieutenants. They have their generals. They have their master blueprint.
Now, by they, you're talking about the people in this country who these right wingers.
Right wing, yeah. Well, yeah. The Project for the New American Century sort of feels like a master plan, and maybe others and other associated things. There are an awful lot of private adjuncts to this, and it's quite amazing. These people who hate socialism and love to use that word. I mean, they're the total opportunists. They have privatized socialism. Here we have, with our taxpayers' dollars, we're paying off private companies to manage things like that used to be belong part of the Army. All these services that are so-called being outsourced, they're not being outsourced. They're being paid for by our tax dollars.
Sure.
I wouldn't call that. All it means is we've privatized sectors of the military.
Sure.
Which, imagine, coming out of the mouths of these people who dare have the pretension of saying that they are interested in the national security. You know what national security is? National security is health care for every man, woman, and child in this country. That's national security.
Mm-hmm.
A decent education.
It's a job. It's a job for everybody. Right.
That's national security.
Right.
All this other stuff about putting fences and walls at borders and stuff, that's just for the sake of provoking fear, as you and I well know. It's sort of the Third Reich kind of stuff being recycled. But the problem that I don't see, we don't have an opposition in this country. I mean, to me, the role of the Democratic Party, sadly, has become, the corporate world is divided into two sectors, those that will follow what the Republicans have to say, and the role of the Democratic Party is to pick up all the others and make sure that they don't say anything or get out of line.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, their job is to put tape over their mouths. Look, just all you have to do is look at the 2004 convention in Boston while Obama was talking about peace as they were swift voting Kerry. While he was talking about bringing the two sides together way back then, they had Michael Moore outside in a pen, the free speech pen.
Yeah.
And Michael Moore, who had done everything to get his film out in time to try and actually bring some truth to the campaign. Back then, I didn't have an awful lot of hope for Obama because he was trying to be a peacemaker at the time that they were attacking full force.
Mm-hmm.
So what is it? So what's new? Nothing. It's
well, I hear you loud and clear, Alan. I really do, and I damn sure share your frustration and your point of view. As you know, if you've listened to this program a long time, and I know you have, you go back to the WINZ days.
But we got to fight back. Somewhere.
Yeah, I know. So the question then is the question that I think every person that has a brain. in this country and cares about our society. And Alan, thank you. The question that we have to ask ourselves before we start asking each other, we have to ask ourselves, how do we want to resist? That to me is the essential question right now. How do normal Americans who truly, if not love, certainly respect the foundational documents in this country, who are willing to continue the struggle for equality and justice, how do we respond? So far, the response, as far as I know, pretty much, has been neutralized, if it exists at all. And that can't continue. At some point, if we're not going to lose everything, if we're not going to lose the hope or the dream, at some point, a proactive decision has to be made about how we're going to respond. Do I have any idea what that decision should be? No, I don't. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. It's time once again for Podcast Trivia on the Malloy Program. The exciting program wherein you can win a free one-year subscription to Malloy Podcasts, commercial-free, courtesy of an anonymous donor who wishes to remain anonymous. So all you have to do is come up with the right answer, multiple choice, to our question, and you are the winner. Okay, let's see. Let's start with John, who is calling from L.A., listening on KTLK. Hi, John.
Hi.
Didn't you win one last week?
No, I lost it.
Oh, that's right. You lost. That was earlier this week.
I thought Danny had more hard driving convictions.
I got you. All right. Well, luckily you got in again. You want to take another shot here?
Why not?
Okay. We'll stick with Dick Cheney and see if you can, see if you can get it this time. Which executive branch position has Dick Cheney never held? Now, remember, Cheney's been around since Nixon. So which executive branch position has Dick Cheney never held? Would it be A, Vice President, B, Secretary of State, C, Secretary of Defense, or D, White House Chief of Staff? Which one of those has he never held? D, White House Chief of Staff?
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry.
he's not my favorite.
I hear the only position he's not held among those four has been Secretary of State. And I think the only reason he never held that is because he couldn't have assassinated the person who held it at the time. All right, thanks, John. We'll try again, I promise you. Eventually, you'll win, right? Let me see who we've got here. Hack is driving his truck in Louisiana. Hey, Hack.
Hey, Mike. What's going on? Mississippi, actually.
Are you ready to play?
Yes, I am.
All right. Where's our next question? Here it is. Okay, this is another Cheney trivia. Okay.
Okay.
All right. During his years as a congressman from Wyoming, which notable legislation did Dick Cheney oppose? All right. Which did he oppose? Would it be A, making Martin Luther King Day a national holiday? B, creating the Department of Education? C, forming the Head Start program for kids? D, banning cop killer armor-piercing bullets? Or E, all of the above?
All of the above.
All of the above?
all of the above.
You win. All right. You got it before we could get out the magic thinking music. All right, you got it, Hack.
Oh, man.
Was that
he opposed some of that. I didn't know he opposed all of that.
He opposed all of it, yeah. He didn't want to ban armor-piercing bullets. I don't know why. I guess because he hates police.
Proof that Republicans hate America.
That's true. He didn't want to start have Head Start programs for kids in Wyoming. Because if they get too smart, they won't go kill for him. And he didn't want the Department of Education, same reason. And, of course, he didn't want Martin Luther King Day to become a national holiday for obvious reasons.
He was a communist. J. Edgar Hoover said so.
Hoover said Cheney was a... Martin Luther King was, absolutely. And, of course, we know that J. Edgar Hoover was always right, right?
Oh, yes.
All right, Hack, hold on. Kathy's going to get the information from you. And, she'll get the information from you, Hack, in just a second. First, she has to clear one of these calls for me because I don't want to leave a bunch of people on hold again tonight. Regarding that lengthy article by Ray McGovern that's at consortiumnews.com, Jude wrote in, she said, I was especially troubled. She said, I read that article. I was especially troubled when I read the quote from Chris Hedges. Now, here's the quote that's in that article by Ray McGovern. And that article is about how religious people support a torture. And, Jude writes, here's the quote from Chris Hedges. The utter failure of nearly all our religious institutions whose texts are unequivocal about murder, the failure to address the essence of war has rendered these religious institutions useless. These institutions have little or nothing to say in wartime because the God they worship is a false God, one that promises victory to those who obey the law and believe in the manifest destiny of the nation. Of course. And thanks for pulling that quote out, Jude. I read it the other night, but I would have not known where to find that quote. In so many instances, whether it is a Christian crusade or an Islamic jihad or something the Hindus would come up with or a Jewish assault on somebody else's country, whether it was biblical or in modern times, and if you really want to see some blood and gore, just go back to the Old Testament. You know, I always make reference to what Joshua was told to do to establish the land of Israel, to invade, cross the River Jordan, invade Canaan, and murder everybody. Children, women, men, pregnant women, it didn't matter. Slaughter them all. Make the land turn red with their blood. Islamists can find the same admonitions by their God in their texts. Christians certainly can. With the Christians and the Muslims, it has to be something that is interpreted that way by the priests or the imams or what have you. Because it really, I don't think, if I remember all the Bible learning I had as a kid, I don't remember ever in the New Testament talk about slaughtering people to satisfy Jesus. And I don't think the Quran talks about slaughtering people to satisfy Muhammad. I don't know, maybe. So it has to be an interpretation. And I know there's a brand of Christianity out there right now that is murderous, just absolutely murderous. Kill them all. Spooky stuff. I don't even like to talk about it. Joseph is in Anaheim, California. Hey, Joseph.
Oh, my God. Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Hi, I'm a big fan. My mom, my brother, and I listen to you here in Anaheim, California.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
You're welcome. I hope you're feeling better. And I just wanted to mention regarding one of your callers about that drug the military people are taking. There's no drug that doesn't have side effects.
Right.
It's proven. And then the second thing was how we're going to make a change to any of this nonsense is I think we got to take the media back because they say when you have the media, you have everything.
Well, that's true. Look at what the Nazis did. Look at what the Soviets did. The first thing you do is get control of public discourse. And you're right. You control everything.
I mean, it's been Michael Jackson for almost a month now. And
yeah.
It's insane. But I'm a big fan, my whole family, so just wanted to let you know.
Well,
I'm going to subscribe tonight.
Well, that's great, Joseph. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I appreciate your call, and thanks for going to MikeMalloy.com and signing up. By the way, that's good. That's my cue to mention to everybody else about becoming a podcast subscriber. You can certainly take a shot at winning one. We think it's great fun. We love doing it. But we also need those subscribers. Somebody sent me an email and said, you know, you're always talking about how it's $59.40 and it's 25 cents a show. That's fine. But there's some of us out here that can't have that kind of a ding on our credit card right now or write that kind of a check. So mention the monthly fee. And that's true. My bad. I keep thinking, you know, $7.95 a month. As opposed to, what would it be? $5 a month. Is that right? Yeah, $5 a month. But $7.95 a month for, to subscribe on a monthly basis, that's fine too. If you have been thinking about becoming a podcast subscriber to get these podcasts downloaded to whatever of your, eToys you want it downloaded to, now's it commercial free. Now's the time to do it. Now's the time to do it. I mentioned before, primarily to reassure the people who have already subscribed, that there is enough backup right now to make sure that we make it through the end of the year, which doesn't mean to wait till the end of the year before you subscribe. That's just to pay the bills. And it has to be an ongoing situation. So if you haven't subscribed to these commercial-free podcasts of the Malloy program, please do so. We really need you to do that. Or what? Well, or nothing. We just really need you to do that. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in a moment, so stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. It is 10 before the hour. Thanks to our group this week, Ben Burt, Sharon Gordy, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, Bruce Enberg, and the executive producer of all this, Kathy Bay. And thanks for you. Thanks you for tuning in while I've had this bronchitis. I know it must be irritating to listen to somebody who is snorting and snotting and coughing and hacking. So thanks for being there. Oh, and by the way, our good friend at Head On Radio Network, The Horn, Head On Radio Network, Bob Kincaid, I understand most of his programs this week were reruns because he was in Washington, I think. Tonight's program that is on the air right before ours on a live basis will be rebroadcast immediately following this program. Does that make sense? So when you stick around tonight and listen to the web stream that Ben Birch provides of the Head On Radio Network show with Bob Kincaid. When you hear that tonight, it'll have been a live program done earlier this evening. So stick around. I haven't been mentioning that lately. I don't know why. It slipped my mind. But Bob Kincaid's program that comes on immediately after this for you folks listening on the web, stay for that one. I think you'll find it to be one of the more intriguing programs on the air. And I normally don't say that. You know what I'm saying? I just don't. But this one's different. Bob Kincaid's program is different. So just when we sign off, just give it a couple of seconds, stick around, and Ben Birch will start the net flow. Bart is in Los Angeles. Hey, Bart.
Hi, Mike. Hope you get better.
Oh, yeah. Well, I feel like I've turned the corner on this. I really do.
I was calling because earlier in the week you were talking about the Muslim woman who had been arrested by FBI agents, and you said you might bring it up again. I thought I'd do it. And
well, let me just recap for the people who don't know. She's an American citizen, born and raised here, European American who converted to Islam. Her husband is one of the people charged in this group in North Carolina with getting ready to do a suicide bombing in the United States, yada, yada, yada. And the way they arrested her, they came to her house, police did, FBI did, disguised, said her husband and sons had been in a serious car wreck. When she went to the hospital, they busted her, and no wreck had occurred.
So she may be innocent, she may be guilty, but these kind of tactics, if she is innocent, are the same thing they've been doing for years. The secret man, a.k.a. Deep Throat, a.k.a. Mark Felt, talked about the degeneration of the FBI being turned into a political tool way back in his time, and even when Hoover had it. This tactic was used with a police officer who was supposed to protect Martin Luther King. He was told by fellow police officers that his family had been threatened, and they tried to take him away from protecting King. And he knew it was a ploy, and they forced him. They had other police officers escort him home to keep him away from protecting King when they were setting him up for the assassination. The whole idea of using this to something that was to hurt her, like something tied into her son's car accident.
Right.
That kind of mental torture is the same thing they did to James Earl Ray. They tortured him in order to break him down and make him less of a opponent when it got into litigation. This is probably tearing this woman's family apart. I wanted to bring that into something you brought up today, which is what are we going to do? I mean, how far are we going to let this go? Protesters at the RNC had their computers confiscated and were charged with provisions of the Patriot Act.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I love the fact we have an African American as a president, but. It was a pragmatic decision on your part to encourage people to vote for him. That's all great and wonderful, but Greg Palast has brought up the point that Obama has strong ties to the nuclear industry, and you can get
mm-hmm.
Brad Freeman gets him on again, have him talk about that. And
right.
If these are the motives of our top elected officials, and they aren't willing to call off their attack dogs, the FBI, and go into 9/11 and do what's right, we the people have to do it. And how soon? How much more is it going to take before people decide? Okay, all right. You know, I'm either going to have the next. You know. I mean, you may not be a protester at home listening on the radio, but eventually, down the line, there's going to be something that you do that is a threat to the established power.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to either have to fight them then or you're going to have to fight them now. And I'm not saying violently. I'm saying it's time to start thinking about peaceful activism. And there's a bunch of groups and coalitions being formed, and the answer is no. There's never going to be a single leader. And MoveOn.org has been dragging their feet, but there are a lot of coalitions forming. MoveOn is finally going for to take down Afghanistan, but you know, to mm-hmm. protest against it. But for people who want real cutting edge activism, they will be announced through your local host. We don't want to put Mike on the spot here until he's seen it, because we don't want to get him singled out and cut off your local radio station like they've done to other hosts who've announced protests. We're going to do it with a bunch of hosts who are going to announce the protest simultaneously.
Well, I've never, Bart, had a problem with that. You know, anybody that sends me an email about demonstrations and protests, so on and so forth, I put it right out there. And thank God for the affiliates that I do have, because they don't, you know, I don't get censored. I really don't. Maybe I'm censored in the fact that we're only on 20, 25 radio stations. I guess that's a form of censorship. Bart, I got to leave it there. Thanks, pal. Send me whatever you want. I'll get it out. I promise you. Y'all have a great weekend. I'll see you Monday. Okay, take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Oh, I am. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are.
Attention, feed.